The next case is 05-1965 and 2114, State of Ohio versus Sean Kress. Mr. Potts.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, counsel. My name is Renee Potts. I represent the State of Ohio appellant in this case. Thank you. And with the court's permission, I would request 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Yeah, watch your time there on the clock.
Thank you. This court should find that the criminal charge of intimidation in violation of Revised Code 2921.04 does not require the state to prove a threat to engage in unlawful conduct, but rather this court should follow precedents, numerous cases in the past where this court has found that where the statute, the language is plain, that the simple meaning of the statute is to be followed. And in this case, the meaning is very simple. The threat of or unlawful threat of harm to any person or property in an attempt to influence, intimidate, or hinder the victim of a crime in the filing or prosecution of criminal charges.
Counsel, is the key word there the unlawful?
The key word here would be yes, and the noun that it modifies more specifically. In this particular case, the statute very plainly states that it is an unlawful threat, and therefore it modifies the noun threat. As Justice Cupp pointed out in the dissenting opinion in this case, that's the noun that we're talking about, not a threat of unlawful harm. And there is a distinction there because obviously this case does constitute an issue where we have an unlawful threat, but not the threat of unlawful conduct.
What would be a lawful threat?
The unlawful threat in this case.
What would be a lawful threat?
A lawful threat? Well, I won't be your boyfriend anymore. I'll move out and take all my stuff. All those CDs that you like to listen to, I'm going to destroy all of them, so you can't listen to them anymore. It's my property. If I want to destroy it to spite you, then that would be a lawful threat.
But not if there was a charge pending and she was the victim.
Well, that would still be a lawful threat in that particular situation. Person could lawfully make that particular type of threat. However, the threats in this case are clearly unlawful in two senses. First, they are designed to cause the victim to make a false recantation, possibly, again, as Justice Cupp pointed out, could subject her to a charge of obstructing official business by forcing her to do that improper act, making false statements to the police. That threat to achieve the unlawful act of lying to the police obviously would be unlawful. Further, it is unlawful because it would be unlawful under the statute of coercion, and that with purpose to coerce another into taking or refraining from action in a situation where they have a legal freedom of choice, person cannot do any of the following, and there are specific instances listed.
Well, the defendant says, I asked her to recant because I thought she was lying when she told the police the first story. He finds himself in jail. Police knocked his door down, and he's put in jail, and he says, she must have lied because I didn't do what she said I did that got me in jail.
Well, that does include, that incorporates.
It becomes a factual issue then, does it not? Who's telling the truth?
Yes. The fact is, that is included in the statute of coercion, and that would make the threat lawful in that situation. We don't have that in this particular case. In this instance, there's no allegation that, in fact, he admits that he did not know what the victim had said in this particular case, didn't know and admitted, in fact, that he had, in fact, crawled into her apartment, had gotten into her bedroom and deleted materials from her computer, etc. So, in fact, the allegations made by the victim were never alleged to have been false. So, in this particular instance, this defendant would have made an unlawful threat under the coercion statute.
Well, counsel, does there have to be a connection between the threat and the desired consequence that the person doing the threatening request? In other words, I'm going to release these pictures about you unless you recant.
Correct.
Okay, so if he would have said, I'm going to release these pictures on the internet about you, period.
That's, unless it can be established, unless we can establish that, in fact, there was that was an attempt to influence or intimidate her into proceeding forward with charges.
But that would have been an example of the statement of a lawful activity that I'm going to do to you. Even though I've got a charge pending against me and you're the victim, and if I say, you know, I'm going to release these pictures, which presuming that's a lawful act in and of itself, there's nothing unlawful about releasing the pictures.
Correct. Independent of the criminal case, one can make threats.
I mean, contained within the criminal case, do you have to have a nexus explicitly stated?
Absolutely.
That I'm going to release these pictures unless you recant.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so if he just said, I'm going to release these pictures, you know, of you, or I'm going to do this or that or the other thing, without saying unless you do activity A, B, or C, we wouldn't be here.
That's correct. If there was no connection between those statements, if we couldn't establish that through his statement to her, or in this case, additionally, he made statements to his family members that was his intention.
Sure.
So, but that would be absolutely correct. And that's exactly what the legislature was intending here. I mean, this is exactly what they're trying to prevent. They want to protect witnesses. They want to protect victims in criminal cases. We want to encourage people to cooperate with law enforcement and not be subjected to being blackmailed, basically, to prevent them from coming forward and telling the truth about what they know. And people shouldn't have to worry about skeletons in their closet. They shouldn't have to worry about whether someone's going to tell lies about them, even, in order to be a victim in a case and prosecute that case. This is particularly critical in cases where the offender knows the victim, often in domestic violence cases specifically, and even in some rape cases. You know, these are cases where victims are particularly vulnerable and have been through perhaps a severe trauma, as in rape cases. And when you have an offender that knows some of the dirty little secrets about them, you have a potential for an offender who is going to use that information to try to and enable themselves to commit those crimes and get away with them. And the legislature clearly intended for that not to happen. That's why we have the intimidation statute. And that's why they went beyond just the coercion statute and gave us the intimidation statute, because coercion is only a misdemeanor of the second degree. And most criminals can figure out, I'd rather be convicted of that than convicted of a misdemeanor one, domestic violence, or a felony offense. So the legislature put some teeth in that, and they made it very clear what their intention was. And they also used very plain language in stating that an unlawful threat of harm to any person under those conditions is going to be unlawful. There is going to be a violation of that statute. There's no dispute in this case that there were some threats of harm and that they were designed to make the victim drop the charges.
And the harm to her being that if she recanted her story about his affliction on her, that she then is subject to what? Perjury or something? What's the harm? Has to be some harm to her that results from the unlawful threat.
Well, the threat that he was making in order to, the benefit he was getting was to have her drop the charges. However, the harm to her by his unlawful threat.
It's unlawful to urge her to drop charges.
It is not unlawful for him to urge her to drop charges.
Okay.
We're not suggesting that.
All right.
The threats that he made to get her to do that were unlawful. Threats to have the children removed, reporting various things to Children's Services, evicting her from her.
Are those unlawful?
When they are done in this context, yes. With the intention of getting her to drop charges and to falsely recant or to coerce her into taking an action or refraining from an action, which she has a legal freedom of choice to do, then yes, that renders it unlawful.
Urging her to do so, to refrain from doing something she has the right to do, is unlawful? I think that's the problem with between the majority and the dissenting opinion in the Court of Appeals, is that the majority says that the threat has to be unlawful and there has to be some harm to the person against whom the threat is made. The dissent says, well, you just look to see whether there's some harm here, it seems to me, possible harm to the person against whom the threat is made.
The potential harm as a result of the threat, I guess I'm maybe not following, hopefully I'll, but the potential threat.
A tricky statute. I think the words, they're a little tricky, aren't they? It's quite as clear as.
I think it potentially could be. I think that we really need to focus on the strict grammar of the statute. And very plainly, we're talking about an adjective modifying a noun, that noun being the threat, and this is
an unlawful threat. Some of the things you've told me so far, in my view, are not unlawful. To urge someone to give up a freedom they have or a right they have to do something, that's not unlawful, is it?
It is under the coercion statute. If the coercion statute clearly indicates that it is. There are, you know, if the person does any one of those things listed in coercion, utter or threaten any calumny, expose or threaten to expose any matter tending to subject a person to hatred, contempt, or ridicule, institute or threaten criminal proceedings against a person, if those are done with the intention to cause the person to refrain from legal action or something they have a freedom to do, then the legislature says that is unlawful.
Coercion is your strongest read here, isn't it?
That is probably the strongest, yes, that would be the strongest evidence of what would be unlawful, an unlawful threat under this statute. And it would apply then to specifically criminal cases, making it intimidation.
So just for clarification in my mind, all these things that he threatened to do were not in and of themselves unlawful. Reporting her as a bad mother to CSB, evicting her. All these things that he said he was going to do were not in and of themselves unlawful threats.
Not when they are done independently of the criminal proceeding.
Okay, and they are not unlawful conduct unless that conduct is committed after an arrest for an offense, and this person happens to be the witness or the victim.
Yes.
Then that conduct becomes unlawful conduct, but
correct,
only in that context.
Correct.
All right. You're saying that there has to be not only the threat to do that conduct, it becomes unlawful when it is shown that there is a demand for a consequence. In other words, you must drop these charges or else.
Yes, that is exactly what the legislature intended. That's exactly what they wrote.
However, if he would have said, I'm going to expose you for the drug dealing, bad mother, person that you are, because you brought these charges against me, That's not a coercion.
No, not in that context. It could be retaliation, depending on the circumstances, but that's not an issue that obviously we have before the court at this time.
Okay.
With that, the state would urge the court to follow the plain language of this statute and reverse the lower court decision and to be remanded for further proceedings.
Thank you, Ms. Potts. Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please court, counsel. I am Kevin Collins. I'm here today on behalf of Sean Kress, appellee in this case. And I want to begin by saying we agree with the state that you can start with looking at the plain language of this statute. And that's a starting point. There are really three perspectives we can take on this statute. The plain language, we look at it up close. What is the element here? The element is an unlawful threat of harm. That is a threat of harm that is unlawful. That is what the state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt to obtain a conviction for intimidation under paragraph B of the statute. The problem with the state's argument is that they're presenting you with a distinction with no difference. They're really bootstrapping this idea of unlawful, taking something which is not otherwise unlawful, but because it's in this situation covered by this particular statute, it becomes unlawful. That ignores the use of the word unlawful. The unlawfulness is part of the element that must be proven in this case. The plain language is here in the statute in front of us, and it must be proven.
But the problem with the Court of Appeals is they don't really talk about and define unlawful threat. They add an element that's called unlawful conduct, and therein lies the problem with their interpretation of the statute. They add words to the statute that aren't in there, and so they're essentially saying that your client would have to threaten unlawful conduct, in other words, some sort of criminal act that makes her recant, that simple threats alone are not the unlawful conduct.
The wording in the Court of Appeals opinion, conduct, probably doesn't really help to clarify this, but there must be some threat that violates a statute. And in that sense, a threat that violates a statute is a threat that is doing something.
So do you think the legislature intended to allow any other types of threats to intimidate a witness as long as it wasn't a threat that violated a statute?
I think there are, and this is really the second perspective on this issue, to take one step back, not to look through the microscope, if you will, but to look back and say, well, here's Section A, which says no person shall knowingly attempt to intimidate or hinder the victim of a crime, and so on, and that's a misdemeanor. Section B, that we're here on today, talks about by force or by unlawful threat of harm. The legislature distinguished between the two. One is a felony, one is a misdemeanor. And that is where this false distinction really obliterates that division between.
So give me an example of what would have fit under the category that you describe.
Under Section A?
No, the category of unlawful conduct.
Unlawful conduct, unlawful threat of harm would be, I'm going to come over and break your kneecaps. I'm going to steal your car. Or in the Hoying case, the hammer will fall heavy on your father.
Okay, so in your opinion, I'm going to come over and break your kneecaps unless you drop this case is unlawful. I'm going to evict you unless you drop this case is permitted.
That is not a violation of Section B of this statute.
Okay.
Whether it is of Section A or not is a different issue, and that wasn't presented in this case, although it could have been. It wasn't.
So you can make any types of threats under B, in your opinion, but as long as it's not a threat involving criminal activity, that is not protected by the statute.
Our position is there must be some criminal aspect to the threat. There must be, and this really brings us to the third perspective on this case, to take a few steps back, not just looking at the sections in front of us, but how does this fit in the whole idea of due process? What we have in this case is really an afterthought. You can look through the transcript, and it's a lengthy transcript, and find the word coercion. you're not going to find it. And in fact, Mr. Kress was tried for extortion and retaliation and acquitted of those charges. Coercion is an afterthought. If that was the basis for the unlawfulness of the threat in this case, Mr. Kress was entitled to notice. And that is particularly true because the coercion statute sets out affirmative defenses. And if that is the basis for the state prosecuting him for an unlawful threat of harm, he is entitled to the opportunity to step forward and present an affirmative defense as it exists under the coercion statute. The state didn't do that. And that is the problem with what they're urging here. We're reaching out here and saying, well, this could be obstructing. That could make this unlawful. It could be coercion. That could make it unlawful. Mr. Kress, as a defendant in a criminal case, is entitled to know what the basis of the allegation of unlawfulness is and to have the opportunity to step forward with evidence to rebut that. And that was not what happened in this case. Looking at any of those three perspectives, whether you look at the plain language, the words used, the grammar used, dissect the phrase, unlawful has a meaning. It's not defined in the statute, not in this statute. It must be derived from some other statute.
Why couldn't unlawful define threat when threat is used to intimidate a witness to change their story? Why doesn't unlawful just define the fact that the threat itself was unlawful? That's the context of plain English. You want a plain English language reading, that's plain English.
And whether you're talking about, I would suggest whether you're talking about an unlawful threat or a threat of unlawful conduct, it is a distinction without a difference.
I see. I see a major difference.
A threat of coercion is a threat meant to do something that is a violation of the law, to cause somebody to do something. Menacing. That is a threat that is really a part of conduct, and that is a violation of law. There needs to be some statute that provides a basis to say this is unlawful. And in this case, it doesn't exist. The idea of a false recantation is a red herring, and I would challenge the state to say what statement it is that would be falsely recanted. The complainant in this case, Tara, didn't want these charges pursued. There is no statement that she was going to recant. That was the second issue that the Court of Appeals dealt with, the supposed expert witness dealing with the recantation. There was no recantation. The whole idea of obstructing is a red herring here. It just doesn't exist. There must be some basis for a defendant to know this is what the state is saying is unlawful. That evidence needs to be presented. Unlawful is part of this element, and whether it's an unlawful threat or you call it a threat of unlawful conduct, I guess our position is it doesn't really matter because you still have to give some notice, you have to present some evidence, you have to say what it is that makes it unlawful. That is what needs to be tried. And without that, it would violate due process. Without that, it blurs the distinction between Section A, which is a misdemeanor, which our legislature said simply attempting to intimidate or hinder a victim. We don't want that to happen, but that's a misdemeanor. However, if you, by unlawful threat of harm or by force, you attempt to influence, intimidate, or hinder a victim, that's going to be a felony. There is a distinction there. And whether the state agrees with that or not, you know, that's an argument that we'd better made a few blocks over at the State House. But we're looking here at the words of Section B, and it is very clear that the threat must be harmful, it must be unlawful. And if it's coercion, well, let's try coercion. If it's menacing, let's try that. But to say, well, it could be this, it could be, you know, causing her to be subject to obstruction, that is contrary to any notion of due process and contrary to the whole purpose of having a trial in the adversary system. Looking at up close or taking one step back looking at the statute, or taking several steps back and looking at how this fits into the whole idea of due process and presenting evidence for the jury to weigh, the state is just wrong. Its opinion, its position is wrong. We would urge the court to affirm the opinion of the Third District Court of Appeals. And unless there are any further questions,
I have a question in regard to your statement about knowing what underlying offense. Are you saying that there should be a predicate offense stated within the indictment if B is used to charge someone? In other words, that you say what the unlawful threat of harm to person or property is by means of? I mean, the statute doesn't seem to contemplate that, does it?
I'm not really sure what the statute contemplates, but whether it would be in the indictment or a bill of particulars, the defendant must have some notice. This is why your threat was unlawful.
Was there a bill of particulars filed in this case?
Your Honor, I'm not sure. I would have to believe there was, but nowhere, I can tell you this, that nowhere in the trial is there any argument, is there any evidence, is there any discussion of coercion. There is no evidence of any statement that was going to be recanted. There just was no evidence of unlawfulness in this case. What we have is the state wanting to bootstrap this unlawfulness element under the statute. It means something. It's there for a reason. There's a distinction between paragraph A and paragraph B. It is part of the element that must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, and it's part of what the defendant must know in order to prepare for trial, in order to present evidence, and to rebut the evidence offered by the prosecution.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Thank you.
Ms. Potts, you may take 30 seconds.
Couple points I just want to make sure I respond to. The idea that there's a different section that would cover this under the intimidation statute, that an attempt to intimidate or hinder, that this would fall under that. Those situations, there are plenty of things a person can do to intimidate or hinder a victim or witness. You can hide the phone so they can't call the police or call the state. You could keep letters and subpoenas from them so they don't know when they're supposed to go to court and those types of things. None of those involve threats. We're talking about threats here, unlawful threats. And the fact that there was no discussion about the victim making false recantation, that's not true. The defendant clearly did say that he wanted her to go in and say that she lied. He wanted her to do that, which would possibly subject her to obstructing charges. The fact that he was not successful is not a defense to this statute, since attempt is included in that.
Counsel, in looking at the statute, it really seems the interpretation you're urging does not seem unreasonable. The interpretation you're urging really suggests we ought to just read unlawful out of this paragraph. If the word unlawful were gone, you don't have a problem.
Well, that would probably be ideal, but that's not the way it was worded, and we have to, I guess, go with what the legislature read as an unlawful threat. But clearly, these would be instances.
Well, it is possible that whoever was drafting this just stuck that in as a handy word and didn't mean much by it. That's really what you're asking us to conclude.
To some extent, that's true. We would say that there are very limited circumstances where you would have a lawful threat in this type of instance, where you're talking about a criminal case and someone is clearly making a threat with the intention to influence a witness or a victim. So, realistically, the consequence would be that most threats would qualify as unlawful.
Thank you, Ms. Potts. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.